Blog Talk Radio.
Back with you again. I hope everyone had a productive and wonderful week, and I hope you're enjoying your weekend so far. I'm glad you're here to join me as we discuss how we are the original co-creators in this dance, returned to fulfill our cosmic and karmic contracts by raising our vibration and that of the collective conscious to assist Gaia in her transformation, to assist Gaia and our universe, galaxy, and solar system. We have all made the choice to ascend into the fifth world. We have left the Age of Pisces behind and are going headlong into the Age of Aquarius, into the Era of Truth. Now, last week when we were together, I presented a historical overview and general meeting of the Kundalini, the seven bodies, and the Merkaba. So I'm pleased that you're here with me tonight for part three of the Return of the Wisdom Bodies, as I present what I call invoking the alchemical Holy Trinity. For me, that's the Kundalini activates and opens the pineal. That's the first leg of the Trinity. And also opens the pituitary gland, that's the second leg, and the thalamus, which is the third leg. That trinity fires up the prana in the channels and brings the chakras into harmonic synchronization. And then the human energy field ignites and transmutes into the Merkaba. So I will continue this line of thought for two more webcasts. Episode four will be next Saturday, February 9th, and that will be the second part of tonight's concept. And then we'll conclude with the fifth part of this topic on Saturday, February 15th, in which I will actually guide you through the Kundalini activation exercise and the steps of the Merkaba, the star fire ritual, which are the actual steps to igniting your aura and transmuting it into the Merkaba. Tonight, I thought that I would start this first part off and just discussing what the pineal gland is, the significance of the pineal gland, and the magic of the pineal gland. And many different ancient traditions say there is a physical gland nestled deep within the center of the brain, where telepathic thought transmissions and visual images are received. This tiny pineco-shaped gland is known as the epiphysis or pineal gland. And it's about the size of a pea. And in fact, the word pineal comes from the Latin word pinea, which means pine cone. Ancient cultures all over the world were fascinated by the pine cone and the pineal gland shaped images, and consistently use them in their highest forms of spiritual artwork. Pythagoras, Pluto, Iamblichus, Descartes, among others, wrote of this gland with great reverence. It's been called the seat of the soul by Descartes. Obviously, if this third eye is receiving direct impressions from the source field, we have not yet identified how such a mechanism might work, but that doesn't necessarily mean the ancients were wrong. The pineal gland is not technically part of the brain. It is not protected by the blood-brain barrier at all. It exists in the approximate geometric center of the brain's mass, and it has a hollow interior filled with watery fluid. It receives more blood flow than any other part of the body except the kidneys. Now that is, that's just amazing to me, that other than the kidney, this little tiny pea-shaped mass in the center of our head receives an amazing amount of blood. And since it's not protected by the blood-brain barrier, the fluid inside the pineal gland gathers an increasing amount of mineral deposits, and they call this brain sand. And these mineral deposits increase over time, which have an optical and chemical property that's similar to the enamel of your teeth. This calcification appears as a bone-like mass in the center of your brain, an X-ray, or an MRI. That's why doctors can use this. They use that hard white cluster to tell you if you have a brain tumor. If the white dot appears to be pushed off to one side or obscured, then they know a tumor has changed the shape of your brain. They also use it to as a reference for size of the tumor. The pineal's importance is obvious. It has been depicted throughout the centuries by various cultures, cosmologies all over the world. Some examples are, there's a bronze sculpture of a hand from the mystery cult of Dionysus in the late Roman Empire that has a pine cone on its thumb. Another one is a Mexican god that holds pine cones and a fir tree in a sculpture that was found by archaeologists. Another one is a staff of the Egyptian sun god Osiris from a museum in Torino, Italy, which has two kundalini serpents that entwine together and a face of a pine cone on the top. As a matter of fact, that image is also found in the Caduceus. A lot of people don't know the actual esoteric concepts behind the Caduceus. The Caduceus is actually the two serpents coiled around a staff, and at the top of the staff is a circular object in some depictions, and in some depictions it's actually a pine cone. And the serpent's heads are facing this pine cone or circular object with their tongues looking outward. This is a representation of the kundalini rising up the spine, which is that staff, and igniting the pineal gland at the top. And the wings on the caduceus are actually the left and right hemispheres of the brain. So that is the actual esoteric, or I should say occult esoteric concept of the caduceus, which the medical practitioners have absconded. It has nothing to do with medicine at all. It has to do with enlightenment. There's also a Assyrian winged god named Tammuz that is pictured holding a pine cone. The Greek god Dionysus carries a staff with a pine cone on top. Bacchus, the Roman god of drunkenness and revelry, also carries a pine cone staff. The Catholic Pope carries a staff with a pine cone directly above where his hand is positioned. And the staff then extends up into the stylized tree trunk. Many Roman Catholic handle holders and ornaments, sacred decorations, and architectural samples feature the pine cone as a key design element. And the largest pine cone sculpture in the world is actually prominently featured in Vatican Square, in the court of the pine cone. So that'll give you an idea of how diverse this image is and actually how important it is. In Asia, statues of Buddha often feature a prominent third eye, and between the eyebrows, there's a raised circular area. Buddha's hair appears to be stylized in the shape of a pineal gland as well. Almost all Hindu gods and goddesses are pictured with a bindi, or third eye, between their eyebrows. Many Hindus still wear that symbol to this day. And the Hindu god Shiva's hair also looks like a stylized pineal gland, with the kundalini serpents wrapped around his neck. Many ancient cultures also used sacred stones to symbolize the pineal gland. The Sumerian version was called the primitive mountain, and it was believed to be the first piece of land to emerge from the primordial sea during the foundation of heaven and earth. And this may represent how the pineal gland is allegedly the first place in the body that is contacted by the waters of spirit, the non-physical realms of the afterlife. In Babylonian culture, this same mountain became a symbol for the axis mundi, which is the axis the world turns on, or the central navel of the earth. And this was the place where the gods came and went. So why is this gland so important? Why are these depictions so diverse? They appear all over the world, different cultures. According to the prolific and controversial Masonic scholar Manly Palmer Hall, Freemasonry traces itself back to Egyptian mystery schools. And he also claims the biggest secret of Freemasonry is the regeneration of the human being into a divine state through the awakening of the pineal gland. each of the 33 degrees of masonry corresponds to one of the vertebrae in the human spine. As the kundalini rises up to merge with the perineal gland. So metaphorically speaking, each of the steps is a degree rise up the spine until you reach the perineal gland, at which point you would have attained your enlightenment, so to speak. In his Occult Anatomy of Man, Manly P. Hall says that the Hindus teach that the pineal gland is the third eye, called the eye of Dharma. It is called by the Buddhists the all-seeing eye, and is spoken of in Christianity as the eye single. The pineal gland is supposed to secrete an oil, which is called resin, the life of the pine tree. The word resin is supposed to be involved in the origin of the Rosicrucians, who were working with the secretions of the pineal gland and seeking to open the eye single. For it is said in scripture, the light of the body is the eye. If therefore thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be filled with light. The pineal gland is a spiritual organ, which is later destined to be what it once was, namely a connecting link between the human and the divine. The certain exercises as given in the Eastern and Western mystery schools cause the pineal gland to vibrate, resulting in a buzzing, droning sound in the brain. This is sometimes very distressing, especially when the individual who experiences this phenomenon, in all too many cases, knows nothing about the experiences through which he is passing. And that was a quote from Manly P. Hall's Occult Anatomy of Man. Now, according to Dr. Richard Cox in USC's Health and Medicine Journal, Descartes perceived the mind as some sort of out-of-body experience expressed through the pineal gland. Cox reveals some surprising facts about the pineal gland. Under the skin and the skull of a lizard lies a light-responsive third eye, which is the evolutionary equivalent of the bone-encased hormone-secreting pineal gland in the human brain. The human pineal is denied access to light directly, but like the lizard's third eye, it shows enhanced release of its hormone melatonin during the night. Dissected, the reptile's pineal looks much like an eye with the same shape and tissue. The pineal, uniquely, remains the major source of circulating melatonin, which tells us when to go to sleep at night and when to get up in the morning. The presence of light reduces the pineal gland secretion of melatonin, and darkness stimulates production. Since daylight and darkness affect the gland's production of the hormone, the pineal functions as a kind of internal timepiece. That was from Dr. Richard Koch in USC's Health and Medicine Journal. There's an article also in Science Daily, which features startling statements from a Dr. David Klein, the chief scientist in the National Institute of Child Health and Human Development on neuroendocrinology. Many submammal species already detect light with their pineal glands as a third eye. Dr. Klein noted that the photoreceptor cells of the retina, the retina of the eye, strongly resembles the cells of the pineal gland, and that the pineal cells of submammals such as fish, frogs, and birds detect light. Now, even more surprising is a study that I stumbled across about a year or two ago. The study was done in 2006, and it's titled New Crystal in the Pineal Gland. characterization and potential role in electromechanical transduction. What the study shows is pictures of the pineogram and different cross-sections of the pineogram where you can actually see these amazing crystals. They almost look like quartz crystals, and they're distributed throughout the entire surface of the pineal gland, because remember, inside the pineal gland is actually water, and then over time that water becomes calcified. But that water is encased in a tissue that is similar to the retina of the eye and is embedded with crystals. Now, to me, come on, you've got water and you've got crystals. And the study also suggests that the pineal gland is what they call piezoelectric, meaning that it conducts electricity. So you have a gland that has water in the center, surrounded by crystals, and it vibrates. I mean, that sounds like almost like an instrument of some kind. So the implications of that are amazing. We could go into a lot of different directions on that one, but I just want you guys to consider what I've just told you regarding the pineal gland and how it makes sense and becomes very clear that it is possible for an energy to be conducted and through, you know, within your body that would vibrate this gland and make manifest. So basically, my beloved, we are incredible entities. We are multi-dimensional entities. Our chakras are portals, and at the very top is an instrument that allows us to interface with the various realms. So, what do you think of that, my beloved? Again, I'm very glad you guys are here with me. And I'm looking forward to continuing this conversation next week when I expound a little bit more on what's going on up there in the Trinity. We still have the pituitary gland and the thalamus to discuss. And how the three of them work together to create the energy that transmutes our auras into the Merkaba. And then, of course, the following Saturday, we will actually go through the steps of the Starfire ritual. So once again, I'd like to thank everyone for joining me. And have a wonderful, wonderful rest of the weekend. Enjoy your week. And I will see you again soon. Peace and blessings.